Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
My guest today is the person you should call if you want to make something happen in motorsport, plain and simple. She has a wealth of knowledge and contacts throughout the entire industry, as well as an incredible knack for getting brands seen through clever and meaningful activations. On a personal note, today's guest is largely responsible for the fact that I now have my own company. Thanks to her friendship, her constant support and guidance, and the fact that she gives me the worst jobs, not true, of course, but by believing in me and seeing potential in me in an area that I definitely couldn't, and asking me to take on a project that was very much out of my comfort zone, we get to where we are today, and I thank her for that very much. My guest today is the best bullshit filter in motorsport, Lindsay Orridge.
Oh my God, it's almost like I wrote it myself. You are the reason why you have your own business now, not me or anybody else, because you decided to do it. So don't be silly.
You were the best kick up the arse I've ever had. How about that?
Well, I deploy that on a daily basis. So yeah, anyone else that needs one, let me know. Pick up the phone. I'll happily give it a kick.
Now, I will actually start the podcast properly now. I'm going to ask you the very first question that I ask everybody, which is, tell me, Linz, when and where did your racing life begin?
Well, many, many years ago, I have a great face cream regime, and my 23rd season that started this year is actually quite terrifying to think that. So I started back in 2001. I was doing a college course because I didn't go to university. I didn't want to go to university, and I left school a year earlier than everybody else because I had enough. And I had to do a, I had to do like a sort of work experience situation between year one and two of the college course that I was taking. And it had to be something relevant to what I was studying, which is sort of event management, travel and tourism-y kind of events and that sort of thing. Because I wasn't really 100% sure what I wanted to do, but I knew that I liked that side of sort of working. I really enjoyed doing that side of things. And I wanted it to be something that I was actually interested in, because if I'm not interested in something, you haven't got a hope in hell's chance for me actually engaging in it whatsoever. I just, yeah, not interested. So back then, many, many years ago, it was in the time where you could literally pick up a phone and ring someone and they would answer it and say, would you like some work experience help? And 90% of the time that person would say yes. And I did that to the press office at Silverstone, and Claire Williams answered. So I was like, oh, hey. And it was, I guess this must have been probably about this time of year, actually. Yeah, probably would have been March when we got told. I was planning on traveling for the whole of the summer between year one and two with my friend, and we were going to go interrailing around Europe. And I got promptly cut down in my prime and told that I had to do a 2-month work placement, which I was absolutely furious about. So I thought, well, if I'm going to have to do it, it's got to be something that I at least have some interest in. So I rang Silverstone and got put through to the press office, and Claire answered, and I said, do you want some free work experience? And she was just like, yeah. So I think I pretty much turned up like not long after that and hung out there for a couple of months and helped in the build up to the Grand Prix. So I was dealing with VIPs who were coming and issuing tickets, and I helped write the media guide and the kind of, I guess, what would be like the program as well, like putting all that together. And yeah, it kind of all went from there, really. And I suppose I always liked cars, and I actually wasn't really a massive motorsport fan, but because I lived so close to Silverstone, it seemed like the sort of most sensible thing to do. Other people on my course were going and working in hotels or, you know, restaurants and things, and I was like, I can't think of anything more boring. Like, I have no interest in doing that. So I had three jobs at the time as well. So I was working and doing work experience and college. Yeah, so I just used to turn up, like, I think I did like 3 days a week in and around my college course, and then yeah, we used to go and sit in the smoking room for lunch because Silverstone actually had a smoking room back then. And it was in the old days before it is how it looks now. And it was all the old, do you remember when we were filming at Silverstone a few months ago and we were talking about this? The old terrapin huts that were there temporarily about 40 years ago and they were still there 20 years later. So, so I did all the press clippings and I did, like, you name it, I did it. I got keys cut for the lockers for the press room and, oh, you name it, like everything. And I actually ended up staying a little bit longer because I guess I was helpful and useful and had a brain. And so I ended up kind of there for about 6 months in the end, on and off, which was, yeah, kind of fun and a very varied mix of things to do and being thrown at the deep end of, can you just go and sort this out? And thinking, well, how the hell am I supposed to sort that out? I'm quite sort of, you know, I suppose confident and logical, so I just kind of worked it out and just got it done, really. So, and because I then had that on my CV, when I then left college the following year and was looking for proper full-time employment, I did a bit of temping and I hated it. Oh my god, it was so miserable. I could just remember coming home at the end of each day and just feeling like I just want to shoot myself in the face because it's just so boring. Like sitting on reception and doing things like that, I just was so bored. And I then applied for a job at Racing Line, which is still an agency that exists today. And because I had that experience of Silverstone on my CV, obviously I jumped out at them and they sort of said, well, you sound like you know what you're talking about. And can you come and help us with our F1 activation this year? So that would have been then 2002. And it all kind of went from there, really. It's sort of, yeah, I was at Racing Line for about 4 years doing all sorts of things, Volkswagen Racing, Formula Ford, Bentley, you know, loads and loads of different things, like kind of event management side of things, partnership management, all those sorts of things. And I guess, yeah, it all kicked off because I had that specific piece of experience on my CV, which was literally unpaid work experience. Claire, in the end, she used to pay me my mileage. She used to write me a check at the end of every week and give me my mileage back to kind of compensate for. And she always bought me lunch from the pub. So it worked out quite well in the end. So, yeah.
She's a good egg. For clarity to anyone listening who doesn't know who we're talking about, this is Claire Williams, who ran the Williams team, who was team principal, deputy team principal by her own words at the end, and who's been very kindly on this podcast before. So yeah, you started well.
I mean, I had a good run, and but I guess at the time she wasn't able to work for anybody other than Williams, and she didn't want to work for Williams at that point. So she was employed by Octagon there, and yeah, we had a lot of fun. And it's funny, even now I bump into people that I worked in the same office with there, you know, Katie Tyler. She was on maternity leave, so I sat at her desk whilst I was there. And then yeah, I still sort of deal with a lot of those people to this day. And obviously then I was at the Grand Prix that year as well. And I did a couple of days of working and helping out with the stuff. And it was the year that, maybe I'm conflating two different years, but I am 99% sure that it was the year that Bernie couldn't land his helicopter inside the track because the weather was so bad. And so yeah, there was lots of fun things to try and deal with that. So yeah, it sort of all kind of came from there. But like I say, I wasn't a fan, and I'm still not. I think one of the big sort of like things that people maybe find surprising is I don't watch motorsport. I can't think of anything more boring. I just like, even at races, I'll watch the start and I'll watch the finish, but in between I'm not watching what's going on. It just doesn't do anything for me. And I think because I have been there, seen it, done it, I've been to every type of race, I've seen every type of win, lose, draw. It's not a hobby. I'm not a fan. I know the industry and I know how to do my job really well. And I've done it for long enough that I am continually employed in it, which is lovely.
Yep.
But yeah, I never went into it thinking, oh, I love F1 and I love motorsport. I watched, you know, racing a bit with my dad, and we loved cars, and that's my thing, is cars, not racing. So Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing to think of, but I think I was so like pissed off at my college tutor for telling me that I couldn't go away for the summer that I thought, screw you, I'm gonna prove to you, I'm gonna have fun, and I did. So it all kind of went from there, really.
22 years later, you're still in
I
motorsport. You're in motorsport
know.
and automotive, which is nuts.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, right? I was just a little itty bitty baby. I just turned 17. Yeah, because it was my
Well,
first.
no, by my calculation, you were 12.
Yeah. I'm 21 in January. So,
Do you reckon if you hadn't had that work experience at Silverstone and you'd ended up, I don't know what else interests you, if you'd ended up on a movie set, do you
yeah.
think you never would have ended up working with cars?
That would have probably been the other route that I would have taken, because when I was at school and I knew that I didn't want to stay for sixth form, I almost accepted a place on a production course on like TV production. And that was way more where my brain was going. So actually, when you boil it down, what I love is stories and content and narratives and you know, pulling all that together. And I just ended up channeling it into motorsport. So absolutely 100%. And that would have been back in the day where I would have learned on that course how to physically like actually cut and edit things like from film, and then
Yeah.
using like early sort of digital software and things like that. And you know, it really was quite a long time ago. So yeah, I think in a weird way, I would have 100% ended up on film set, producing, directing, something like that. That would have been, which kind of is pretty much similar stuff to what I do now, you know, 20 years later.
And just to finish off your CV, so you Silverstone, then you go to Racing Line, then you are Ford, I
Yeah,
think,
Ford poached
in-house,
me.
right?
Yeah, Ford poached me from Racing Line because I was doing a lot of work with them, and actually I left Racing Line and took a couple of months off, and they then were like, come on, you know, come on, play with us again. And I did. And yeah, so I went to Ford and I ran their World Rally Championship stuff. I still got involved in the Formula Ford stuff because obviously I knew it inside out already. And ended up dabbling in a bit of, you know, some of the NASCAR EVAT stuff as well. So yeah, I was at Ford for, gosh, it's really testing my knowledge, my memory now, which is not the
It
best thing.
doesn't
About 3 years,
matter.
I think I
A
was at
little while.
Ford. And then, yeah, Ford decided to pull a lot of their motorsport funding. So, because I was a contractor there, I wasn't an employee. I got kind of given my marching orders, as did a lot of other people, and kind of came out halfway through, well, three quarters of the way through a season, like, what the hell am I going to do now? And I had some great agencies that I was working that were working for me when I was at Ford. I was their sort of client, and they very quickly snapped me up and got me in house to do a load of different things for them. So I went to Imagination, and I won some helped them win some work in the kind of car industry for them, launching new cars. So what did we do? Range Rover Sport, Range Rover Evoque, and oh, the Rolls-Royce Wraith launched that globally for
Nice.
them. Yeah. So I kind of ran around the world doing that for a few months to finish off the end of that season. And yeah, in that interim period, was talking to a few different people. I ended up at an interview with McLaren, which back in those days, I had absolutely no aspiration to work for whatsoever, because, oh, it was so different to how it is now. And I remember going in for the interview and thinking, I can't work here. I would be fired within 5 minutes, because I could just hear my laugh ringing out in those silent offices, and everyone
Well,
was
they had a
going
clean desk
grey.
policy.
They did. You couldn't have, everyone had to have the same pen and the same notebook, and you couldn't put your jacket on the back of your chair. You couldn't like have a sip of water at your desk. You had to make a phone call that wasn't on your desk phone. You had to like walk out into the car park. I was like, absolutely not. Like, you will regret hiring me. And in that time, because of my time at Ford, my lovely Ken Block, who started at Ford at the same time as I went to Ford, I was new girl, he was new boy. He had tried to encourage me to go and work for him in America. And it wasn't really the right time for me personally. I just wasn't in the right place to be doing that. And I didn't really want to go and do it. And he badgered me for months and months and months, and in the end, when he realized that he couldn't get me to go and work for him, I'd already been speaking to Monster Energy because I knew them, obviously, because a lot of the Ford drivers were Monster Energy drivers. And Ken eventually was just like, oh, for God's sake, like, if you won't come and work for me, then I'll, you know, how else can we get you back involved in what we're doing? And I was like, well, I'm speaking to Monster. And then all of a sudden the Monster thing became a thing. So yeah, I just sort of they were very kind and sort of said, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, here's what I'm good at. Like, what do you need? And yeah, I wrote some things on a piece of paper and in a pub. That's the best job interviews go. I've never had a proper interview in my life. Yeah, I started the following February. So I wrapped everything up at Imagination. and went on my merry way to Monster and was there for, probably about four and a bit years there. And I headed up all of their comms for everything motorsport, so two-wheel, four-wheel. And that was, again, in that weird twist of fate, I was the new girl and Lewis was the new boy in that time. So he had just joined Mercedes and I just joined Monster. And my very first event for them was at Silverstone at the BRDC Clubhouse. And they'd gone out to their social channels asking if you could ask Lewis Hamilton, our new sort of signing at Mercedes, anything, what would you ask him? And I went and shot that with him. And he didn't have a clue what he was doing, neither did I. So we just sort of made it up as we went along. And I heavily edited a lot of the questions that 90% of them were about Nicole Scherzinger. so I managed to remove those ones. And did that with him. And then my feet literally didn't touch the ground for 4 years. I was never home. I was always on the road. I did about 35 to 40 weeks a year on the road. I had Lewis, I had Nico, I had Valentino Rossi, I had Jorge Lorenzo, MotoGP, Ken thought he was going to be, getting the VIP treatment because I was back at Monster and he was my favourite. And I got hit in the face with all these other hundreds of athletes that suddenly became my problem. And I think I worked it out one time. I think I had like 100 something athletes that I was looking at. Yeah, it was absolutely nuts.
Well, I was going to say, it baffles me that it was just 4 years because it feels like way longer.
Oh, God, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, you did so much.
I honestly don't know how I got through it sometimes, because it was a bit like the Wild West. We were just out in the business of doing cool shit and doing it really well and doing all the shit that nobody else was doing. So that's why, Ken went from strength to strength when those projects, the bigger Gymkhana videos and all those sorts of things that I worked on for years, they all came together. And it was wild times. I mean, it was absolutely bananas. And then I then fell over and hit hilariously and ironically ran out of energy and hit a brick wall one day at the Goodwood Festival of Speed. And I just thought, I just can't do this anymore. I cannot do this anymore. And I remember sitting in the trailer, sewing some Castrol Edge patches onto his race suit because Alpine Stars hadn't sewn them on and they just sent them in a bag. And, the woman in the room who knew how to sew got tasked with sewing them on. And there's this hilarious photograph that my sort of assistant at the time took of me just me sewing these things on. And you can just see in my eyes, I'm just like, I'm done. I'm so done with this. And I left Goodwood 2 days early. I was just like, I'm done. And I just went home. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And and I quit the next day. So I was like, see ya. And then I set up on my own eventually. Yeah, that was, I took about 6 months of sleeping and discovered that I'd basically completely burnt my body out and had no vitamins left, and to this day have to have all my vitamins injected like on a monthly basis because my body just was destroyed by it. So and set up on my own, and I kind of wanted to have a bit more control of my own destiny. I didn't want to be told, well, here's the roster, this is what we have. It wasn't the best use of my skill set and my talents, and I'd got that really good grounding over those previous however many years of doing lots of big projects with big brands and big athletes that gave me that confidence to think, well, I can just go do this on my own and just pick the projects that I want to do and the bits of the projects that I'm really good at rather than the bits that don't really set my heart on fire. So the Motorsport Collective was born.
Exactly, and you haven't stopped since. But it is a feeling of stepping off the roller coaster, isn't it? You're like, I want to have fun, I want to be at the theme park, but I am not going to be stuck on the roller coaster anymore. I need to be able to choose what rides I'm doing.
100%. And there was a weird period where I thought to myself, oh my God, what have I done? And it was really odd. I quit my job on the Monday, and in that week I got offered three other big opportunities, and I turned all of them down, like Top Gear, the new series of that. And I was just like, I can't, I need to sleep. I just need to sleep. Leave me alone. I want to go to bed. And there was chats with Lewis's team about me kind of integrating in there somehow. Ken was still trying to get me to go back and, work with him. And I just wanted everybody to sort off basically. And I had to just get my body and my mind back into some semblance of normality. And about 6 months later, I was like, oh, okay, I think I've got this together. And I got pumped full of vitamins and suddenly was like, oh, this is what it's like to be alive. Got it. Now I remember.
I really wanted to spend some time setting the scene with what your background is, because it is unusual and it's also so freaking roller coastery, and you've done so much. But now that we've done that, I kind of want to ask you, what's the biggest misconception about your job?
just because something looks easy or the best thing or the execution of something is good, it sometimes those things are actually the most difficult things to get done or actually impossible to get done. Some of the best ideas that I've ever had have never ever seen the light of day, because it might seem like a really good idea at the time and you can see how it can happen even with, you know, decades of experience, but it just doesn't work, or the budget isn't quite there, or the client isn't quite brave enough, or whatever any of those things are. I just think that's a huge misconception. It's like all the things that look absolutely brilliant and badass and shiny and polished at the end of it, oh my goodness, you have no idea the amount of effort that goes into even the tiniest little things. You know, we always used to joke that, you know, Gymkhana would take a year to plan and I don't know, a week to film, and those 6 minutes would be the best 6 minutes of somebody's life watching it. You'd just be like crying into a can of Diet Coke and a bag of Haribo to try and get through. So yeah, and I think, you know, there are some other sort of misconceptions that I run up against all the time, that and one of them, which I think is probably a really important one, I sort of referenced earlier, that if you're a fan, that you should then look for a job in the industry. And I personally don't necessarily subscribe to that. I think there's certain jobs that you are better because you are a fan. If you need to know about what's going on track, all the ins and outs and all those sorts of things, then being a fan, obviously it bypasses the learning process of that because you're just enjoying yourself because it's a hobby, right? Yeah. But I, on the whole, don't really tend to like employ or like give work to fans unless it's something that really, really needs someone with that, you know, sort of angle, because I actually think it's really distracting. Like a lot of times when I have been involved in situations where there have been somebody who's, you know, been working on a project with you and they're too busy trying to take a selfie of themselves in the pit lane, and you're like, come on. Like, there's actually,
like, get starstruck, unfortunately. Yeah.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, I think you almost got close to describing it, but I want to get it out of you anyway. What does success look like to you?
Oh my goodness. Happiness, genuinely happiness. Being happy with the people that I work with. I don't work with people anymore that I don't like. I just don't. Like, we all have to, like, say there's always people on projects that you think, well, you know, I really probably would cross the street to avoid you, but you know, life's too short to get too hung up on those sorts of things. But I'm in a position now where, because I have been around long enough, that I am lucky enough that I can sort of pick and choose a lot of the projects I work on.
Yeah.
And I think also that the the sort of work that I do isn't, I don't like to do projects that someone just wants a warm body to fill. I don't like doing those sorts of roles. I want somebody who actively wants someone with my skills, my skill set, and therefore me, in order to fulfill the objectives that they're trying to, whether that's a campaign or an event or a whatever, or a piece of content or whatever. So I think, and that sort of automatically sets you up for success, because there is only one of me. There isn't someone else who's got the same level of experience that I have. And I have a hugely broad range of experience. I haven't just done F1, and a lot of people have just done F1 or just done rally or just done MotoGP or something like that. I've done everything. So I'm very lucky that I, in lean times, can look over here and look over here and look over here, and pick up the phone and ask for something if I need it from a lot of different people, because I have got that really wide range of experience. But success to me is really being happy and getting out of bed in the morning and not thinking, oh God, I don't want to do this. I don't want to live like that. And I've never wanted to live like that. And I kind of make it my sort of mission to really be thoughtful about the things that I choose to do, and not just say yes to something because it sounds good, or I really dig
convenient.
I dig into things quite a bit before I say yes to them, because I want to be successful at them. I don't want to take something on, be like apathetic about it, and then not be able to deliver a decent, you know, sort of project for someone. I think it's funny, success, isn't it? Because everybody measures it differently, but to me it is.
That's why I ask.
Yeah,
because I love the answers.
Yeah. But it has to be happiness. Success has to be happiness, right? It can't be material things or...
Do you have a proudest moment in your career to date? And did you get to celebrate it? Because we don't often stop.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. There's probably lots I could choose from. One of the sort of things that I'm really, really proud of is working with Ken Block for a long, long time and a significant part of my career. And when he tragically lost his life at the beginning of this year, it was... a bit of a kind of wake up call sort of moment of thinking, oh, wow, okay, yeah, I'm hugely privileged to have been involved in that time of his career. And the reason I do what I do now is because of him, pretty much, because I was able to work on those huge projects. I became like one of the boys straight away. It was me and, you know, those 10 boys running around the world together for a solid decade. And it gave me the confidence personally to know that I could go and do those things under my own steam. So I don't have any fear whatsoever of like a project being thrown at me. Anyone that comes to me and says, can you do X, Y, and Z? I'm like, sure. Like, I don't ever think, oh no, I don't know. Like, yeah, I can do that. And that's a lot of it is down to having had those experiences over that significant period of time with him and his team. It was funny when we were at the funeral, everybody had that same story of like, felt like you were the odd one out and didn't really kind of fit in anywhere, and you were a bit like, you know, had like a weird sort of like life experience that got you to where you were. And he really recognized that in people, and like we had this like weird little band of brothers that were kind of all like weird misfits, but then put us all together and we were this like absolute force to be reckoned with. And that to me is like, I think, you know, would have to say defining moments of my career. At the time I knew something good was happening, but afterwards you then think, oh yeah, like, and he was one of the first people when I set up on my own, he was like, great, can you come and do this for us? And I was like, sure, of course I can. So it's, you know, very fortunate that we get to work with all these amazing people. Some of them are more amazing than others, as we know, but yeah, he really is the reason I'm able to do what I do now, and he's the reason why a lot of people have the sorts of jobs like I have and that, you know, you have. And he upped the game to a degree that people just weren't doing that stuff before. And it suddenly became a job.
He redefined that part of the industry. I think we have to acknowledge that. I normally ask what's the lowest point as a balance, and I don't want to ask you it.
Oh yeah, I've definitely got plenty of them. I suppose burning out was the low point, and it was, you know, it was a big warning sign. And I'm like fiercely protective now of my sort of energy and where I spend it, and never want to go back there again. And yeah, I can't. Oh, like I look back at pictures of myself and think, who the hell is that ghost? And it was me. I was just like this little skinny, like horrible looking ghoul. And I just, my body was just like, stop. And I couldn't hear it. So that was definitely a low point. I think as well, the sort of, the other sort of challenge, like to counter that sort of success thing, is how you juggle everything else, because this is just work, right?
Yes.
It is. I know it's a career, and I know it's something that I, you know, it consumes a large proportion of your life, but it is just work. It really, really is. And I wasn't always very good at balancing that out at home. Like, I would come home and just sort of lie in a dark room for 6 hours and then just carry on again. And I didn't really have like a home life for a long time. And I didn't have anywhere to live for a long time, because I didn't really need to live anywhere, because I was on the road all the time and I had all my belongings in storage, and, you know, relationships breaking up and having to sell properties and then get back into things and then try and work out what to do. And then I lost my job at Ford very soon after all those things happened. Just literally just, I got back on my feet like 2 days later and I lost my job. And dark moments. But I think the one thing that the defining characteristic of the people that work in this industry who are good at what they do and are here for the right reasons is resilience. And
yes,
it builds resilience in you to a degree that you'll either sink or swim. And if it doesn't build resilience in you and you're just overwhelmed by it, well, you very quickly, you know, what's the phrase? Fuck around and find out. If you fuck around in motorsport with like not being resilient, you will find out very quickly.
You'll find out.
You're resilient. And so that resilience is always there. So even when it is really crap and, you know, there's been so many things the last few years, like personal challenges that I've had to overcome, that I've had to keep everything else afloat at work, and work's actually been sort of my savior in a way. You know, last year was a really tough year, and I channeled all of that sort of energy into making sure that I didn't fuck up what I was doing for work, because it's my business. And if I don't have a business, I can't live. And it can be really positive in that sort of way. But yeah, I guess you've got to hit those lows to find out what's really important. And what's really important is being happy, not, you know, standing in a pit lane in Monaco.
Which you've done many times.
Fine. I hate that pit lane. It's so small. It's horrible.
It's quite scary.
I'm terrified that time. I hate it.
What motivates you?
Doing a good job. I really care about doing a good job. And I know that sounds really corny and really cheesy, but I really care about doing a good job, not only for my own benefit, but also to make sure that, like, whoever I'm working for, the client, is happy, but also the people around me. Like, can you imagine anything more miserable in existence than having to do, you know, 20-hour days with people that you can't stand, or people that you can't, like, literally say, oh, I'm going to lose my shit in a minute, I need to walk away for 5 minutes, and have someone just be like, I totally get it, understand, and you can just go and take 5 minutes and come back. Like, so it really motivates me to make sure that I'm only surrounding myself with people like that. Like, I really struggle when I'm on an event or I'm at in a project with people that don't really get it, and that you can't sort of be really honest with, because I'm like 99.9999 million, you know, percent honest, like probably too honest at times, which I think is a plus and can definitely be a minus. But I think it really motivates me to want to be with people who are also doing really good jobs. That's why I love working with you on these projects we've been working on recently, because I know that you will come in and absolutely smash it. That makes me really happy. It means that you're happy, you get paid, I get paid, my client's happy, everybody wins, and the end product is great. So that to me is super motivating.
Do you get stressed anymore? Do you allow yourself to get stressed? And how do you switch off? How do you relax?
I definitely used to. And I was one of those people that didn't think, I thought I didn't get stressed when I
at my baseball. And then your body told you.
Yeah, until my body was like, how about you have a little lie down in bed for 6 months and spend every week in hospital? I was like, oh, cool. So I definitely didn't deal with it properly then. So now I know that I have to get as much sleep as I possibly can, even if that is only like 4 hours on like a busy event. But everybody has that choice, right, of, do I stay for another drink, or do I, you know, just have supper and then go out? Like, there's some things that are unavoidable because I have to host things and I have to be, you know, entertaining, blah, 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 whatever. But if I don't get enough sleep, and I don't really drink a huge amount anyway, so I try and like leave that to, you know, at least Sunday night if you want to have a big blowout, and eating a proper breakfast. If I don't eat properly during the day, I will murder someone. I will absolutely murder someone. I need protein. I need, you know, lots of veggies, and I need lots of really good healthy stuff. If I can't have that, I will literally kill someone by Friday night. You're like, game over. If I'm any combination of cold, tired, or hungry, any combination of those three, watch out. I'm basically like a newborn baby. I cannot cope. So I used to take that as a challenge of being like, well, how far can I push myself to prove that I'm strong, so I can put up with being cold and tired and hungry. It doesn't matter if I'm not eaten. I'm the complete opposite now. I always have, like, you know, emergency banana in the bag and emergency granola bar.
Emergency nuts.
Emergency granola bar. Like, in the breakfast in the morning, like, a couple of boiled eggs in the pocket. Whoa, go! Like, honestly.
I've literally just shown my emergency snack that's next to me whilst we're recording.
Oh my God, I can't think of anything worse than being hungry on an event and not having a snack close at hand.
This is sounding a lot like advice I would give to someone who's considering motorsport, and that's actually the next thing I wanted to ask you. Like, what advice would you give to anybody who's looking at you and is thinking, wow, I want to do that. I want to do that too.
Oh my God. Well, maybe think twice. No, all jokes aside, I think, you know, definitely the consideration of just because you're a fan, don't think that it's going to be the best job in the world. There is no such thing as the best job in the world. There just isn't. Like, I'm very fortunate. You're very fortunate. We work with people who have got seemingly best jobs in the world. But I guess it's a bit like if you went to go, you know, if you love Disneyland and you end up going to work at Disneyland, like, you're going to see Mickey Mouse take his head off at the end of the day and probably be really disappointed that it's just a man underneath it. And the magic goes, right? So I am under no illusions about how this industry runs. And I know the best parts, but I know the worst parts of it. I know every tiny little bit in between, like we all do. But it does still work, right? So you have to just be like, yeah, okay, that's how this works. You know, the same way someone at Disneyland has got to be, you know, zipping up Mickey Mouse into his Mickey Mouse suit at some point. So
I'm probably helping him go to the toilet.
Exactly. That's got a little bottle just conveniently placed on his suit. But I would say that. And also, don't think that everyone else is your competition. Like, we work in such a competitive industry, and everyone talks about how this industry is so competitive to get in. And yes, it is. And there's lots of gatekeepers, and not all of those gatekeepers are very good at opening that gate in order to bring new people in, which is incredibly frustrating if you're on the outside and you want to get in. But don't be competitive with other people in the industry, especially if you're trying to get in. Like, I get you have to do that a bit to get into the industry in the first place. But once you're in, don't make it into a competition. Let that happen on track. Let all of that stuff happen on track and fight it out then. And then the flag drops and then it's fine, because there is enough work to go around. It's a small industry. And I know it can sometimes feel a bit like, you know, that analogy of like, it's not pie, you know, don't take a little bit. And then, you know, there's enough to go around for everybody. And I think there's a few people that you encounter that you think, oh, why? Like, why are you so competitive with me? Like, I'm not you. You're not me. I don't care. I'm like the least competitive person in the world. Like, if you ever play a board game with me, I'm just like, oh, whatever. I'll just like lose the first one because I just don't care. And I'm just like over it within 5 minutes. But don't be competitive with other people.
Beautiful. Have you ever been given a piece of advice that you still use? Like a handy sentence that you tell yourself?
Oh, I would probably, actually, again, have to bring it back to Kenny B. Do better. Like, just do better. And there were times where you'd be like so thrilled because you thought, oh, I've nailed this. I've absolutely nailed this. He's gonna be so pleased. And he'd go, yeah, I mean, but you missed that and you could have done that. And you think, oh shit. And that kind of pushing you to do more and better, even when you think you've done your best. Like, it can be exhausting at times. There were times where I literally just wanted to punch him in the face and like be like, have you, but I've worked really hard. Like, no, get your ego out of the way. It's like, if this person who is an absolute boss at what they do is telling that you can do better, that's a gift. That is not a criticism. That is a gift. And that you have to then go, oh, ego to one side. Okay, yeah, I could do better. Oh, actually, yeah, he's right. I could do that. Leave it with me. I will come back and this will be better. So I think, being pushed in that way by someone is, like I say, is the gift that will, you know, carry me through the rest of my life. It really will.
I think, when it comes from a place of, I believe in you, exactly. I know you can do better.
Yeah, not do better because I want to shame you, but we can do better. You can do better. Go and do better. Brilliant. Like, all day long, I would take that. Absolutely all day long, I would take that. So, I'm very fortunate that I'm now in a position where I work with most people that I work with are in that category and happy for me to push back. They're happy to push back on me. And we make things better and we get on with it. So it doesn't always work, but It's worth trying.
You try. Right, what are you looking forward to? And that is genuinely, that is my last question.
What am I looking forward to? do you mean motorsport related or anything?
Say what you want. Honestly, what's your holiday?
Yeah, I was going to say holidays, sleeping, anything unrelated to motorsport is what I look forward to. I cannot express enough how little I get. So first race this weekend, right? Great example, Bahrain. And someone sent me a message at about, 7 or 8 o'clock last night after the race had finished saying, God, did you see blah, blah, blah? And I was like, again, how have you not learned? I don't watch. I don't even know what I was doing. I was doing anything other than watching the race. And I say this and I really don't mean it to sound like, I don't want people to come away from this feeling like that I don't care. It's absolutely not that I don't care. I just physically do not care about what happens on the racetrack. It has no bearing whatsoever on what I do for a living. If someone wins, great. Easier to sell a thing or do a thing or a campaign or whatever, brilliant. But if they lose or crash out or don't finish, it actually doesn't make any difference. Like, I'm working on all those things that are like linear to that and that are not affected by race results. And I think I cannot express how little if you walked into my house, does it look like I do what I do for a living? No, it doesn't, does it?
But also because it's in your shed, so.
Yeah, I mean, in my shed, it's not. It's not parcels. That is the only thing. If I dropped dead tomorrow, someone would find all of my passes and go, who is this woman? And if they looked at my phone, it's just pictures of my dog and my cars and my garden and pictures of me and my friends. I take 3 pictures at a race, if that, and they're normally like hilarious things that have happened that I want to then send to someone afterwards. No one would know what I do for a living if you walked into my house or like came into my life or looked at my phone. It's just not, like, it doesn't define me anymore. It used to a lot, and it was so important to me, but that's why I got sick, because it consumed me, and it was the only part of my identity that I had was, what do you do? Well, I work in racing. Oh, and what? And it was like, well, I didn't have an and what, because all I did was work. And now I have an and what. I have a beautiful garden that I love, something that's really slow that requires me to really plan things and isn't immediate results. Like, everything that we do for work is immediate, right? Even if you're doing a long-term plan, like, there's still loads of other dopamine hits to be getting. I love the fact that I can plant a seed this week and I will then in October be able to eat the vegetables that I've grown. Like, that is so appealing to me because it's so calming. Like, I even feel calmed just thinking about that concept, and driving and just having like no destination and not having to hurry or rush. Like, if there's a deadline that I need to hit, I will nail it for work, and I will bring it in a week before deadline, hands down, every time. But when it comes to home life, nope, I don't want anyone asking me questions, I don't want deadlines, and I don't want anyone like desperately needing my time. I want me, my time, to do what I want with it, and everyone else can fuck off.
Fair enough. Well, let's both look forward to vegetable season.
Hallelujah. You know it's going to be good.
And I look forward to coming around your house and eating it all with you.
You know it. We'll be sending you baskets of courgettes.
I love it. Absolutely. Yes, please do. Thank you very much, Lindsay. That's it. We're done.
You're welcome. So welcome, my love. And I love you.
I don't even know how to follow that other than to thank Lindsay again for her time. She's a dear friend, as you can tell, and has so much experience in motorsport. I'm really glad she agreed to have a chat today and share her take on working in this industry. I hope you found it useful and entertaining in equal parts. I definitely did. As ever, I'd like to thank the producer of this show, Press Play Productions. The absolutely brilliant Tabitha is the one who turns our chats into very nicely edited podcasts that you get to listen to each time. I'm very thankful for her time and her skill set. If you enjoyed today's episode, as always, please subscribe via your favourite podcast platform. Please leave a review if you can. Tell your friends, post about it on social media. It really helps new people find this little podcast, or current people come back. And the more people listening to this, the better it does and the more funding we can get to hopefully carry on. So I really appreciate it. You know, I read every message directed at Racing Lives or at my own Instagram account, which is Pandeia, P-A-N-D-E-A. Feel free to get in touch, send me your messages. I absolutely love reading them. They mean the world to me. There's also a link in the show notes via which you can support the podcast directly should you wish to. I really appreciate that every time as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much for listening, as always, and speak to you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.